Today's Tuesday, November the 14th. Oh, no.
What? Can you guys see that?
We've been marked. It's the green line of death. The apple cometh.
I wonder if this means this is going to be the last episode of the news that we can do before we have to go visit the Genius Bar and pay the $279 repair fee.
I think we'll be dead.
Oh, we should still be under warranty. It has been just over a year. The warranty has run out on level one.
That's always how they get you. We didn't get the extended warranty on YouTube Live.
Oh, so many follow-up stories this week. Bitcoin is a roller coaster of crazy. My heart palpitations? I don't know. I don't know how to describe this. Bitcoin has crashed, but Bitcoin Cash has uncrashed. Something. I feel like there's a tongue twister in there involving Bitcoin Cash crashing and other things that begin with C.
Well, actually, we had the original story we were going to go with was Bitcoin at all-time high. It was 8,700, I think it hit. Crazy. But then, of course, it crashed. I looked this morning. I think it was right at 6,000.
Yeah, it crashed below 6, actually. I mean, it bottomed out at 5.7 or something like that. I think, I don't know that even, it was moving so quickly that I don't think all the exchanges really caught up.
So why? It seems like the reason is the fork, the November 16th estimated fork, not going to happen. The SegWit 2x has been canceled. We're sticking with the current block size, and I think a lot of people were poised to, they were buying to catch that split and get whatever the two things were, and they were like, oh, no split, I'm out.
Wow. So that seems like an awful lot of volatility from a relatively small number of players. Huh. That doesn't seem like that would be a good thing for the longevity of Bitcoin.
Now, Bitcoin Cash, of course, shot up.
Better than ever, woo!
So I don't know. At this point, I'm just hanging. I'm just going to keep them, right? It doesn't make any sense to sell, I don't think. I mean, if you'd called the 8,700, of course, that would have made sense, but that's it's a dangerous game.
It's all a dangerous game. It seems really speculative. I guess its inaccessibility prevents people from freaking out and wanting a bailout or something. I don't know.
Well, who's going to bail it out? It doesn't have a government. Who are you going to tax to bail that out?
Well, I can tell you, if JP Morgan and Jamie Dimon gets involved with Bitcoin, there will be bailouts.
Do you think, I mean, I know we have a short memory, but can he ever face the public again getting into Bitcoin when he said that he would fire, and it was the stupidest thing in the world, he would fire anybody that did it?
Yes, because none of us is as dumb as all of us when it comes to the public. Equifax, speaking of really dumb things, Equifax, the situation with Equifax is really, you know, it's an ongoing saga. It's an ongoing, it's not really a saga, it's just insanity. So the CEO testified before Congress because Congress is, you know, of course, asking WTF. And you should really go read all of his testimony before Congress. It's gold. It is solid gold.
The best nugget that came out of it is he was asked, why didn't they encrypt? And he didn't really have a good answer for that. And he talked a bunch of crap and they were like, no. Simple answers. Okay, are you encrypting now? And he just like, you know, went off on this big spiel and they're like, no. Binary question. Are you? And his answer was, I don't know. They don't know if they're currently encrypting the same information that they lost.
Well, I'm sure we're discussing it, but
I think that means the answer is no.
Probably not. Yeah, right. So Uber, if you're in the UK and you Uber, you do the Uber thing, you know, maybe you want to make a few extra bucks on nights or weekends or whatever, you've got a situation with workers' rights. And so UK panel has ruled that Uber drivers have rights on wages and time off. But I didn't really understand, because don't you just sort of opt in to whenever you want to drive with Uber?
That is. So we've got this new thing they call the gig economy in the world. It seems to be big with millennials. You're no longer committing to one employer, you're just sort of like a butterfly. You're just going from job to job, doing little jobs. But they don't seem to like that in Europe. They're not big fans of that. So they say that these are not contractors. They are employees. Mm. And they need benefits and, you know, things like that.
Seems like that's going to mess up Uber's business structure.
And any other, like, you know, Lyft is exactly the same, right? And there's a lot of little businesses that are popping up like this.
The entire gig economy is outlawed in the EU. That's going to be the American headlines. Like, CNN is going to run with that. It's like, EU, those backward yokels are outlawing the gig economy, contractors. I mean,
Well, of course, the traditional taxi companies and things like that probably had a lot to do with this. Probably had some voice in this.
In America, we've got an ongoing war on damn near everything. The war this week is the war on encryption. The DOJ has said that strong encryption that we don't have access to is unreasonable. The thing that's dangerous about this is that they've been working on their message. So, you know, we always comment on the goings on of encryption and things like that. So they found somebody who's willing to talk about encryption, and to a layperson, to somebody that is not a computer scientist or somebody that has no idea how encryption works, what he's saying sounds great. It sounds wonderful, but it's actually not possible in this reality.
So this is in response to the latest mass shooting, of course. They have this guy's phone and they're like, oh, we can't get into his phone to prevent future episodes of this. You must let us in. And at this point, you know, all the phone companies, they've heard the message. They're like, no. We can't let you in because people will crucify us for that. And they won't buy our phones. And let's face it, that's the most important thing in the world, right? So this guy is saying he supports encryption, right? Oh, yeah. He's all for strong encryption. But for him not to have a back door, he says, is unreasonable.
He obviously does not understand how encryption works. If there is a weakness, the criminals will exploit it. If there is, like, encryption is just math based, so criminals are not going to magically start using encryption that has a back door. I mean, if your phone has a back door, you're simply just going to download an application that has unbreakable encryption because the math exists. There's not such a thing as math where the math is capable of reasoning and saying, oh, law enforcement, cool, yeah, come on in. That's just, unfortunately, the modern world that we live in.
And I think most people, I don't know about most people, but most people who understand technology are in the know enough that even if they're not engaging in criminal activity, they don't want these alphabet agencies to be into their phone because they know they'll take it too far. They'll do anything to, you know, progress their own careers or close the case or whatever. They don't really care about rights. And if you're, you know, I'm not planning a mass shooting or buying cocaine on the internet, but I certainly don't want them in my phone.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you never know what's legal today may not be legal tomorrow. And it's like, is that going to interfere with your ability to work or is it going to interfere with your ability to do other things? I think Bruce Schneier had the best analogy. He's like, well, you know, terrorists eat at restaurants too. So what if we poison all of the food just a little bit so that we can catch the one-off terrorist? And it's like, well, everybody is suffering because they're eating food that has been poisoned a little bit. Makes about as much sense as weakening encryption.
I fear that these kinds of events, they make people willing to give up freedoms. That's why they do it. That's why they're using this timing to do it. And people are like, oh, God, well, if it prevents somebody shooting up a church, I guess I'll give up my freedoms. And
it definitely doesn't prevent anything.
You never get them back.
That's crazy. YouTube is also doing some crazy stuff with their algorithm and fun stuff like that. So YouTube has said it's going to crack down on bizarre videos targeting children. Look at some screenshots here. Honestly, you guys should check out the videos. Some of these are really funny. Have you ever seen Robot Chicken on Adult Swim? A lot of these videos are just adults playing with children's toys in fairly hilarious ways.
Now, we know because of Robot Chicken that the owners of these intellectual properties really don't like this. They really, but we have these parody laws. It's totally legal to do it because it is obviously a parody on this famous thing. But, you know, if you're a powerful company and you go to YouTube and you're like, this must go away, YouTube might find a loophole, which is, of course, dangerous to children.
I just don't know. It's funny though, because with the Robot Chicken cases, you know, there have been several lawsuits from toy companies and other IP rights holders against Robot Chicken, but because Robot Chicken was actually using the real toys rather than mock-ups, which is for some of the reason why Robot Chicken actually has purchased very expensive collector item toys from the 80s, they couldn't get in trouble for appropriating the IP to show up in a TV show, because you can't just like take the He-Man character and start using your own thing for it. I mean, there is the parody aspect of it, but that by itself is not enough. With Robot Chicken, they also bought the actual real toys and basically just filmed themselves playing, doing stop motion with toys. A lot of this is like that as well. So I think that it's sort of, unfortunate that that type of content is going to be demonetized by YouTube. I think it is collateral damage in the same way that like the World War One history channels on YouTube have been demonetized.
Not just demonetized, they're going to pull them from search results and make them basically invisible. And I'm sure the old not show, even if you subscribe, doesn't show up on your list. That old chestnut, we've experienced that.
I don't understand. We get a lot of referrals from our RSS feed. So if you haven't done that, you should totally go do that or join Patreon because you get notified there too. So it's a lot of fun. So this is also a follow-up. We talked last week about how Colorado has this thing where local communities can opt out of state law that would prevent a Comcast monopoly in their area. Well,
that's what Comcast is pressuring the FCC to put a stop to.
Yes, which is funny. I mean, wait, weren't they saying that the FCC doesn't have jurisdiction when the FCC...
States' rights, man.
So, but wait, yeah. That's the opposite message of what they were saying with the whole net neutrality thing. Because with the net neutrality thing, they were saying, this is not the FCC's jurisdiction. It's like, we'll follow the law. We just want Congress to enact the law. And now they're saying, this is the FCC's jurisdiction?
It's also interesting that Pi, the drum that he bangs most often is there's too much regulation. We must cut back on regulation, which, hey, that sounds great. I support that as well. Except the moment that regulation is beneficial to his masters, we must have regulation. And that's the problem.
And that's what this article on Motherboard is all about. Colorado, the situation in Colorado actually seems like a reasonable one. It's like, here's how we at the state would guide you into doing things at your community, but you can opt out. And communities are opting out. In fact, almost half of the counties in Colorado have opted out of a Comcast monopoly.
And I think this would be a snowball, right? Because when the county next door is like, oh, hey, your internet's really nice and fast, and what are you paying for that a month? Then the next election, they're going to vote the same way.
This article also mentions that one of the Colorado communities has the most consistently highest rated internet service in America. And it's apparently run by a city, but companies that actually provide internet service compete to use that infrastructure. So the city provides a fiber optic connection or something, but not an internet connection. And so you can get your fiber optic connection from the city and then whatever internet service over that fiber connection, which seems like exactly what was proposed in the 96 Telecommunications Act. And that exists in Colorado. It's a unicorn. It's apparently the best ISP in America.
Yeah. Hopefully this will catch on everywhere. Now, I suspect if this were to like really start to spread, it would almost be like a heat map of local corruption. It's like, wait a minute. Why doesn't my county have that? Oh, look at who's in charge.
Local corruption gets them every time. So the Justice Department is reviewing this whole AT&T Time Warner merger. Now, Time Warner, most people, when they hear Time Warner, they think of the broadband company. This is Time Warner, the media company, which is a different thing.
And the big thing that's on the chopping block here, these aren't official reports, but it's like, people close to the deal. So somebody's leaking. But they're saying that the Department of Justice wants either DirecTV or CNN to get sold off to make this more palatable. Because, of course, if you own CNN plus all this other stuff and you're giving the news and you're the only voice, of course, DirecTV is another way of delivering the signal, if you own that plus all this other stuff. So I think they've expressed unwillingness to do either of those things.
It's more bizarre than that because apparently the executives involved in the AOL Time Warner side of things sort of walk back even those claims. They're like, no, CNN, selling CNN off or doing something with CNN was never really on the table. So I'm not really sure what to make of that. I mean, all of this was definitely behind closed doors. It's definitely something based on a leak, but the duplicitousness and lack of transparency with regard to exactly how this merger might take place just seems counterintuitive for how these things are supposed to be handled.
And it's also, I hate to sort of jump on the conspiracy bandwagon here, but a lot of people are saying it's part of Trump's animosity towards CNN that, of course he denies it, the White House denies it, but they're saying, hey, really, he's probably made a phone call and was like, listen, this merger doesn't happen unless you destroy CNN.
Is our leader really that petty?
I think he might be, yeah.
Wow. So Marissa Meyer, she used to be the CEO.
She was also at the congressional hearing along with Equifax, by the way.
Interesting. Yeah, she's kind of retired, semi-retired these days. She's not really the CEO of Yahoo anymore, not since the Verizon takeover.
Yeah.
But she did sort of apologize for the data breaches and has blamed the Russians.
The Russians.
I guess that's the in vogue thing to do.
Man, this could be a great Twilight Zone episode. Where, you know, like I've said before, and I'm sure I'm not the first to say it, it's a neo-McCarthyism. We are blaming the Russians for everything. But, like, you really are getting attacked by the Russians, and you're trying to tell people, and they're like, it's the Russians.
What a great time to be able to get away with something.
But, yeah, she's blamed the Russians and sort of didn't really take a lot of responsibility, I don't think. She sort of, you know, kind of sloughed it off to the side. But it is nice to watch these people squirm under questioning, if nothing else.
I wonder if she's enjoying her wealth or is freaking out because she's looking for something to fill her hours with and having trouble.
I think she was very embarrassed because, of course, she was like the media loved her so much because she was a woman and she was young and she was pretty, but she was a technical genius, supposedly, and she was in charge. She was powerful and she drove it off a cliff. So that's got to be kind of embarrassing. You know?
Yeah. Does that come down to management style, incompetent lieutenants, a combination, Yahoo being a turd to begin with? We may never know.
We won't find out from this congressional hearing, that's for sure.
U.S. court has granted... So this is the Sci-Hub thing. So we're all following up on this. Sci-Hub is a place where you could get technical journals and things like that you normally have to pay a subscription fee for completely for free. They were sued. Sci-Hub was sued by the people that published those papers. So this is an ongoing thing. Well, in the latest, because Sci-Hub has never responded, the publishers have been granted injunctions where they can go to ISPs and they can go to service providers like Cloudflare and say, hey, these people are using your services. You need to block them. Or this traffic is traveling through your network. You need to block it, which is sort of weird. Because of the whole safe harbor. It's like going to AT&T and saying, we know you provide long distance services. We don't think anybody should be able to call this phone number.
The big thing about this, I think there was some kind of appeal or something. This went to another judge after the injunction. And everybody kind of expected them to be like, no, this isn't realistic. But instead, this judge upheld it. And I think took it a little further. At this point, even Google might be forced to block search results for Sci-Hub, which is like crazy.
Yeah.
Now, part of this, of course, is because they won't show up in court. So these are just default judgments. It's like, oh, well, whatever you're asking for, they're not here to defend themselves. So I guess so. But still, for a judge to go that far, especially when we just had the other judge overturn the whole thing about the Canadian thing. You know, it's like, hey, Canadians can't block internet stuff for the rest of the world. That's ridiculous. And now we're doing this, which amounts to the same thing.
I don't understand. It's a mess. It's a terrible mess. But on the other hand, I can see why the Sci-Hub people don't even want to bother defending themselves because it's a quagmire of insanity. Why?
Well, they're not in the U.S., right? Yeah. So there's no way they're getting on a plane. You might get arrested. Like the old, what was the name of that guy that went to the hacker conference? I got arrested.
Oh, malware tech blog.
Yeah.
That guy. Sorry, guy. It's terrible. Oh, the next story. The Verge. The Verge has a story. There's a sex toy company that has internet-connected sex toys, but apparently it just records everything on the microphone. Like, it's supposed to just record voice commands, but apparently it would record the entire session of use of the sex toy. I don't really...
Now, this... The software has the ability, this is incredible, you can record clips from your session, audio clips, and share them. How great is that? The best thing about this story, and this is how I knew that I'm living in the future. One of the sentences from this story is, this company had another problem earlier this year with their Bluetooth-connected butt plug.
I don't even, you're going to have to go read these stories for yourself to suss out the details. Cause I don't even. Good Lord. Oh, so this is a funny story. Well, this is kind of a funny story. This is the headline for the story is man uses DDoS for hire to attack former employer and taunts the firm via email. And I really like, if you work somewhere and you don't like them, just stop doing work for them. Like, you don't have to do this. Like, I feel like a PSA is needed here. So apparently they quote unquote parted on good terms. But not really, because this guy was sort of harassing them. It's like, oh, you're getting attacked? Oh, well, I don't know what to do there.
Now, the terrifying thing here, well, there's two things.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
First of all, this guy was using a VPN, IPVanish. Now, they didn't say it outright, but I'm pretty sure IPVanish got a call from the FBI, and they were like, yeah, we certainly do keep logs. Here's his IP address. And that's how they figured out it was him. Well, of course, he also sent them an email of the after the DDoS or during it with a picture or a GIF of a laughing mouse, and basically he's like admitted that he did it. But the other thing is, so he kind of knew what he was doing, but not really. He just hired these services. He spent less than $500 and ended up taking down a bunch of websites. It was very, very easy for him to do this. So that's the scary part.
Don't even worry about it. Why would it matter? If you have the skill set to be able to do this, finding stuff to fill your time with is just not even going to be a big deal. Just don't do the work. I don't understand.
You will get caught.
Yeah.
VPNs are not going to. So this is the, what was the other? Was it Pure VPN?
I think so.
I don't want to say for sure. I don't want to cast aspersions at Pure VPN, but now IPVanish, it's become obvious that VPNs do always keep logs, even though they say they don't. And one call from law enforcement, and they will give you up. No problem.
A VPN is good for making sure that your ISP is not spying on you or your mobile provider, like your mobile phone provider. That's about it. Because we've seen that Verizon and AT&T have no qualms about mining the data as much as possible. So, yeah, use a VPN in those situations for that purpose. But it's like, I want to do illegal things. I don't think a VPN is really going to help you. You have to figure out something else, like not doing the illegal things. WikiLeaks. So yeah, this is we're going to take a little different stance on this. So WikiLeaks has started releasing source code for the alleged CIA spying tools. These are the tools that we have covered previously for the different kinds of attacks, but this is going to be the actual source code for these tools. Yep. And they're trying to be responsible about this, it looks like.
It was Vault 7. Vault 7 was the information about everything they did. So this is Vault 8. This is the actual tools themselves, the source code. And they're not giving us everything, but they're sort of making an argument. It's like, well, here's the stuff that we don't think is really going to do any damage, but you know, you can go and look at it.
Supposedly, WikiLeaks has also been contacting companies like Cisco to disclose the source code of the tools that are used to attack them. But I gather that it's a little bit of an unusual situation. From this source and other sources, it looks like WikiLeaks doesn't like the people that are handling this in WikiLeaks are not really used to like security disclosure or like how security stuff works. So I get the feeling that they're literally just emailing like the Cisco security team. Hey, here's this tool. And the tool's not like point and click. You got to like look at it and figure it out and work with it. And so I think WikiLeaks has been frustrated because some vendors have not really taken it seriously because they don't know what they're looking at. Because a lot of the time security researchers have to give you like the step-by-step to reproduce the issue before they'll actually acknowledge that there's a problem. I mean, certainly Microsoft does that. So
this particular one is all about disguising your malware as something else. And we talked about that before. Now, the interesting thing is a few sources have said that Kaspersky in particular is mentioned in some of this stuff. So it's like, oh, you mean the NSA was pretending to be Kaspersky? Didn't they have some things to say about banning Kaspersky recently? Oh, that's interesting. We could not find a quote-unquote mainstream source for any of that, which I don't know what that tells you, but it tells you something.
The InfoSec people in the audience can go research that for us, write a post, get it published somewhere, and we'll cover that in a subsequent episode of the news, because I'm sure that's going to be a developing story. But it's got to be either one of two situations. The Russians got their hands on the CIA tools and then used the tools and like a double blind. It really was the Russians. Or it was the CIA pretending to be the Russians. Either case, not relevant, because what was the root problem? What was the original thing that happened here? There was an NSA contractor that took stuff home off of the NSA, off of the secure network.
See, I'm going to disagree with you there. The root problem was they were hoarding exploits. That's the root problem.
Okay, fair. Yeah, that is, I would agree with that. That is also a problem, a major problem that probably would be a non-issue if they were responsible with the security. Like, this is also a microcosm of what it's going to be like. Like, if this whole backdoor encryption, responsible encryption stuff gets shoved down our throat, we as technologists, we as citizens, will experience what we are currently right now today experiencing with these tools. It will be fundamentally no different, because once the Russians get a hold of the tools,
WikiLeaks
or whoever, Pandora's box is opened and there is nothing you can do to stop it. I mean, if you get the backdoor encryption key for the iPhones, because in the mythological future where they went along with the FBI's request, are you going to be able to patch 5 million, 10 million, 100 million iPhones by tomorrow?
And what happens to Apple Pay in the meantime? Is anybody going to accept it? Because that's a lot of fraudulent transactions you might have to roll back or deal with or something.
So if you want a preview of the future that has backdoor encryption, we're living it. This is it. Facebook. So I read this. I had trouble concentrating on this article because the only thing I could think of was that skit in Always Sunny where the one girl is talking to the other girl that is really upset, and she's like, I can't believe my boyfriend uploaded the nude pictures that I sent to him in confidence to a revenge porn site. And they're like, oh yeah, that's just terrible. There's just so many of those sites on the internet now. It's just so terrible. But which one was it? which website was it? So Facebook is trying to put an end to revenge porn by suggesting that you revenge porn yourself and upload all of your media to YouTube. Or to Facebook. So.
And now, the crazy thing about that, you have to post them one at a time and then click the flag button, right? Who has time for that? I'm going to need a batch upload if I'm going to get all my nudes onto Facebook in a timely manner. You know, I got like 3 gigs.
I've got all of my regrets organized into one folder.
But yeah, that sounds crazy, right? But you are hearing it correctly. They're using, so child pornography apparently does the same thing. We've reported on this before. They go and they find child pornography and they create a signature, a hash that matches only those files. And so if you upload that file to Facebook or whatever, no human has to look at child pornography for them to say, oh, hey, we know that image. You can't upload that image. So the idea here is you upload your image and you flag it and it goes into that database. But technically, it's another situation like what happens when there's a Facebook leak.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. Then maybe they delete them, but
do you trust Facebook to delete anything? Yeah. Not only that, but Facebook is not the internet. I mean, it's like, oh, you made it slightly harder for this to happen on Facebook. Not going to stop it if somebody, creates a clip, creates a compilation, creates a mosaic and uploads that to YouTube. I mean, it's just none of that is going to stop it.
Something tells me that 4chan's not going to implement this same protection. WorldStar Hip Hop is not going to add this to their service. So, maybe just keep your nudes away from Facebook.
Yeah, probably a good idea. What about a watch that doesn't require a battery or any kind of like power source other than human body heat? That seems like a little bit from the Matrix, doesn't it?
I really do like this. I mean, it's not really something we usually cover, but I thought this was impressive enough. Now, I don't know if real people have their hands on this yet, right? They were going to ship them to backers. It was an Indiegogo thing. I couldn't get a feeling of anybody actually has one yet. But supposedly, this thing will run purely off your body heat. It has to do with the difference between the temperature of your body and the external temperature.
And that generates enough power for a watch. What a time to be alive! And this is how I know we're living in the future.
They claim it can sleep for up to a year, which is also crazy. And also, it doesn't have to be flesh, just anything warm, warmer than the surrounding area. So you could put it on like maybe your charger at night, and it would go ahead and still be charging.
I wonder if I can get a pillow with this technology, because it seems like every time I wake up in the middle of the night, my pillow feels like it's 200 degrees and it's just an uncomfortable mess.
What would your Internet of Things pillow do?
I don't care about the Internet of Things thing. I just want it to use the heat to, I mean, it could be a Rube Goldberg machine for all I care. If the result is that it cools off the pillow, it uses the excess waste heat to cool the pillow, then I would be all set for that.
Maybe. All right. Maybe you're onto something here. What if it was like a racing suit? Where it had a cooling system in it, powered by fans. You know, it's got little radiators and you have a fan on the other side of your pillow that keeps your pillow cold.
I could go for that. I think that would be a dramatic sleep technology improvement. But you know what's not an improvement in smartphone technology? It's the iPhone X. Apparently, the iPhone X, you get a green line and then your phone dies. Kind of like the episode of the news earlier.
Did you just call it the iPhone X?
Well, because iPhone 10, you know.
Yeah, this is the fun thing about this that I like is because of the back display being pointlessly transparent, you can see the green line of death on the back of the phone too. So even if you're hiding the shame of your green line of death, people can see it while you're trying to hide it.
I've never understood that. There definitely seems to be two camps of people. There's the person that has the iPhone and the screen is broken and horribly mangled in some cases, but a lot of the time it keeps working. And so people will continue using their phone. But then there are other people where there's just like the most minor problem, like there might be a scratch or a tiny crack in their phone, and they're like, oh my God, I have to get a new phone. And it's like, but why though?
Yeah. I think a lot of that has to do with part of the iPhone sales is just like, I have to be like everybody else. And I have to have exactly what they have. If mine is flawed in some way, then I too am flawed and cannot function.
I think I'm probably somewhere in the middle. It's like I can live with a crack or two or three or a chip or a scratch or whatever. But when the display is just completely shattered, I'm getting little splinters of glass in my finger. It's probably time to get a new phone.
As long as the little bottom part, if you can see the most recent text message and your typing of the text message, it's all good.
Well, 2017 turned out to be the year of the Linux desktop. Well, it's not Linux, actually. It's Minix, but I'll take what I can get. So the Intel Management Engine has switched from Intel, some proprietary binary, to being Minix-based. And Minix, of course, predates Linux. Minix sort of famously was the operating system that Linus Torvalds started with before he made the Linux kernel and it became GNU plus Linux and all that sort of fun stuff. Well, Minix is a full-featured, really powerful operating system, the new version of the management engine. The thing with the management engine is that it runs below the operating system. It runs basically on the bare hardware. IT departments like it because we can format your machine over the network. We can re-image it. We can do all kinds of stuff. Spies love it because they can do all the same stuff over the network, whether you intend for it to happen or not. And so Google sees that as a vulnerability based on what Google as a company has experienced with their landlines being tapped and their servers being co-opted. So they're going to remove it.
The big argument with it, of course, we all know that the management engine exists and it has full control. And it's a horrifying thing if it were to get compromised. But Google is saying, we know what's in Minix and we know that a lot of that stuff just should never be in this kind of hardware. A big thing they cited was the web server. does your management engine need a web server?
Apparently it does.
So Google is, they've declared war on the management engine. I don't know what that means exactly, but they're going to try to get rid of it.
I don't know if they're funded by Google or not, but if nothing else, Google can dump a bunch of cash here and it can definitely move the needle in terms of preferences. I did see that there's also, and this is probably something we'll cover next week or the week after as the story develops a little bit more, there is apparently a USB exploit that has been discovered if you have a USB stick that's specially crafted, because the USB subsystem is tied into this management engine as well. You could completely take over a fully locked down PC with nothing but a USB stick.
And that does not require a network connection, which is the normal path of attack. Now, of course, there is that old adage that, physical access to a PC, if someone has physical access, there is no security. So I guess that.
I like the idea of an IT department disabling a USB port, and then it's like, oh, you disabled the USB port. How quaint. Click. Intel and AMD. This is really the big story this week. Intel and AMD, Team Red and Team Blue, together at last for a product. So this has been covered everywhere. If you have not seen this, then congratulations. We must be your number one source of news. Thank you. That's an honor and a privilege. So Intel and AMD teaming up. What happened here? Well, first of all, AMD is AMD and Radeon Technologies Group. There were changes at AMD a few years ago where Radeon Technologies Group is basically its own almost entirely independent thing now. So it's really it's Intel plus Radeon Technologies Group, which should tell you what they're working on.
This is going to be integrated graphics, basically. It's going to be a far more powerful version of Intel chips with integrated graphics. They've got the, what's the name of the technology they use to tie the dies together?
Glue?
IMDb or something like that.
It's not glue. We promise it's not glue. That stuff we were saying about glue and AMD gluing things together, it's totally not that, we promise.
But Intel wants to compete with the, you know, the integrate on your laptop or whatever, instead of having those Intel graphics that can't really do anything. Hey, maybe you play some Rocket League, you know, maybe you play some Overwatch with your Intel plus AMD chip.
Now, it doesn't look like it's going to be Intel plus Vega. This looks to be a Polaris-based architecture. There's really not a lot of details on this, though. We don't really know a whole lot at this stage. I'm going to speculate and say that I don't think that Intel or Radeon Technologies Group came up with this idea on their own. Because, I mean, obviously the Radeon Technologies Group, their first thought is going to be, let's use the Ryzen CPU. Maybe the Radeon Technologies Group could not have predicted that Ryzen was going to be as successful as it has been at the beginning of the year, and that this is just coming out of that. This is like a plan B in case of that. But I don't think it's either of those things. I think that AMD or Radeon Technologies Group and Intel both have a common customer that spends enough money with them that wanted this product to exist. And I think that's Apple. I think Apple is the reason this exists. And I would not be surprised if this combined Intel plus Radeon graphics chip is an Apple exclusive.
It is interesting. If you want to talk about the biggest player of 2017, look what AMD has forced the rest of the industry to do. You got the 1070 Ti. That's not a card that NVIDIA wanted to put out. That fills a tiny gap.
It's a graphics card that literally is a press release.
Look at those i9s with their ridiculous core counts. That's not something Intel wanted to do. So AMD, you know, for all, whether you like them or not, they are making other companies do crazy things, which includes Intel partnering with them.
Yes, definitely. And I don't know. I mean, I may be wrong about this. Maybe there is a wider market. Maybe Apple hasn't asked for exclusivity, and we're going to see an HP Envy or a Dell or something that has this combined CPU. I don't know. Ryzen, I think, is good enough. And Ryzen plus Vega, I think that we will see. I really doubt that we will see Vega on this combined die, but maybe not. Maybe we will. I don't know. Maybe it's always going to run one generation behind. I don't know. I don't know. But I think that if we do see more modern technologies in this kind of a package, I think it's going to be Apple's doing, because I think Apple wants this product. I think Apple wants a really tiny notebook that has insanely fast graphics, and this is the only way to get it.
We know it has to be thin, right?
Yeah.
Because you can never make it fatter than the current generation. That's the rule from now on.
That would be a faux pas.
Yeah.
So the other thing that's been happening inside of AMD is when Vega launched, Raja Koduri, who's in charge of the Radeon Technologies Group, super, super nerd extraordinaire, has been with Apple and Intel. Well, has been with Apple and AMD, and then like way back when AMD was ATI and sort of all over the place. He went on sabbatical almost 2 months ago, and from when Vega launched. And so Lisa Su, the CEO of AMD, sort of took over Radeon Technologies Group, and she's been working in. Vega was perhaps not quite what it was hyped to be. A lot of people speculated that, you know, Raja Koduri was about to be fired or something. Nope. Turns out he went to go work for Intel. So Raja Koduri has left AMD to go work for Intel on exactly this project that we were talking about. He's going to be working on Intel's graphics initiatives.
Well, they're also talking about possibly an Intel high-end graphics card. So Intel might get in the mix, which is hilarious, because it's like, okay, we're going to partner you on this. And by the way, we're going to go into direct competition with you on the high-end cards. And so I do think, though, that the hype train, I think this was sort of acrimonious between AMD. And it shows you the danger of the hype train, especially if you're the engineer. You don't want to be driving it. And I'll tell you, I might be alone here, but I hate this new world of the rock star engineer. I don't care who you are. You want to impress me? Make a product. Impress me with your product. You don't need to be tweeting and putting your face out there and doing these crazy interviews and stuff. It's like, just go behind the scenes and make products. That's your job.
Yeah, for every Lisa Su that there is, there's 50 Marissa Myers.
Yeah, or the guy we never hear from who's doing the real work, you know?
It's like, you be the face man. You be the rock star engineer. We're just going to work on this stuff. Yeah, I mean, I could totally see that. I mean, he knows his stuff, which is obviously why Intel hired him. But I think that the work he's going to be doing is going to be more on the high end. I think that Intel doesn't really care about desktop graphics.
But he does love the limelight.
Yes, he does.
You can't argue with that. He probably spends an inordinate amount of time doing that rather than working on these graphics cards.
Maybe that's what happened to Vega.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like he sort of, you know, went all in on hyping it and putting his face on it. And I was like, oh, well, it's fine. Yeah, that's nice. But you didn't blow our minds like you planned or you warned us you might.
It's going to be funny if in 5 or 10 years they figure out why Vega did not scale up all that well from about 1 gigahertz. And it's because they needed an extra shift register or two or something like that. And it's like, oh, we missed that in the silicon. Oh, we just needed to do one more spin. We'll be fine. I guess we'll find out when we go to Navi. Huh? If Navi is still a thing, because AMD was asked for comment on those things. And the only two comments that I could find from Radeon Technologies Group and AMD was like, RTG has a lot of IP in our graphics portfolio, which we will vigorously defend, which I thought was kind of a funny way to respond to the whole Raja leaving RTG. And the other quote was something about no comment. It was like, hey, is Navi still going to proceed as planned? No comment. So I don't know. This is going to be coming up in the news a lot. So the next few weeks of news is going to be really interesting, I think. IBM has raised the bar with a 50-qubit quantum computer. Now, I didn't think that was the real story here. So it's like, yeah, 50-qubit quantum computer, blah, 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 quantum computing is the future. Apparently, there is a way to use some math and multiple steps to simulate a higher qubit system with fewer qubits, which I thought was more interesting, but I couldn't find any details on that at all.
Yeah, this was light on the details, and it also is light on any sort of real-world application of this. This is still in the theoretical phase. It's nice that they're, you know, continually trying to push the bar on the whole quantum computing thing, but it's not going to change our lives anytime soon. It's fun to see, I guess, the qubit count keep getting higher.
Yeah. I want a 50-qubit quantum computer on like a watch or something. That would be nice. then we'll revisit that. You know what else is exciting? When Facebook executives basically let you see behind the curtain a little bit. So this story is great. Like, everybody should go read this because this is just...
Well, this guy showed behind the curtain, the cellar, the shallow graves that were in the cellar, the manacles hanging on the wall, the bloodstains.
I really like the fact that this guy's like, I'm going to tell you all this stuff, but I'm pretty sure that Zuckerberg's going to unfriend me after I do.
Well, he also mentioned he's a billionaire. So it's like, what are you going to do? He's like, he's kind of like Wozniak. You know, it's like, yeah, we're kind of assholes. We've ruined it. His big thing was he was talking about how from the ground up, they knew it was psychologically addictive. That was their goal.
Ooh, have some dopamine. Actual quote from the article.
And they, you know, sort of like, well, if we give them these likes, and I'll tell you, you know, I don't Facebook, but we post YouTube videos. And when you get those positive comments, when you get those likes, and when you get those view counts, it's the dopamine. It's there.
Thanks, everybody. Woo! SpaceX. SpaceX rocket engine suffers failure during test, and it's like space.com. This sounds really good. And this is totally clickbait. This is like clickbait for nerds, because you look at this and this is the next version of the engine that they're using. This is not the current version of the engine, and they're testing it. They did a liquid oxygen test. They accidentally blew up the test chamber. It's only going to take 2 weeks to fix. It's fine.
Yeah, we're on the 7 and this is the 8, or maybe it's 4 and 5.
Block 5.
So it's not like it blew up in the air and killed people or, you know, the
satellite. Lost cargo or anything like that.
It's just in the chamber, but it is funny how, you know, it's like SpaceX hasn't had an explosion in, and they have to like roll the number back 0 days.
This is, they don't even have to ground their existing fleet. Like, they don't believe that problem that this had is even related to anything. So I think this is good. It's like, oh, we found a situation where our next generation engine might fail. This seems like a good thing. This seems like a non-issue. I don't know. Well, this might be a bad week if you had an Ethereum wallet that had, what did they call it? It was like a multi sign-off or something like that.
It was one of those software contracts where you can only withdraw or change the wallet if everybody agrees or if a majority agrees or something like that.
Okay. So there was a bug like that in Ethereum. 300 million of Ethereum is just gone. A hard fork is being considered. Historically, their position on a hard fork in this kind of situation was, no, we're not going to do that. But the last time that happened, $30 million was involved, not $300 million. So this may be a hard fork in Ethereum to reset that, which I think is the more interesting story here. I think that Ethereum is like, oh, something bad happened. A bug was exploited. This was so bad. We can do a hard fork and roll it back as long as a majority of the community is willing to participate in the hard fork.
Now, this was not, well, this probably wasn't malicious. It's all the word of this one guy, but he didn't try to steal the money. That's the thing. So what happened was there was a previous bug and they had fixed it. And this guy was sort of like playing with that. I was like, oh, what if I did this? And he managed to convert that entire wallet to his ownership. And when he did so, he was like, oh God, I've just stolen $300 million. So he panicked and suicided the contract is the way that they call it, which means that that money is not available to anybody. It's sort of like locked into the blockchain forever and no one can access it. So yeah, $300 million just disappeared from Ethereum. That's pretty bad. But this guy might not have really known what he was doing the whole time. So it's interesting to think about that.
Switching gears a little bit, there has been a leak, if you will, something called the Paradise Papers, which provides insight into how Apple and other technology companies use tax shelters. And so we're just going to do a quick mention of this because this is an exceedingly well-written article that explains how, in plain language, how Apple uses international tax havens to avoid stuff and how things have developed over the EU. Because in like 2014, like it all went through Ireland, and then in 2014, the regulations kind of changed a little bit. And then Ireland opened up some new stuff and Apple shifted things around. And so this story is fascinating. You should just go read it.
This is, if you remember the Panama Papers, this is the same people releasing these. This is the Paradise Papers. Now, the interesting thing about it, technically what they did was legal, right?
Yes.
Quote unquote legal.
Tim Cook has testified before Congress. We pay every dollar of taxes that we owe, which is not technically incorrect, but at the same time, their overall tax rate is very low.
But he did say, we don't look for loopholes. That's not something we do. When in fact, these papers prove that. So they used the Irish thing where you can have a company in Ireland, but it doesn't pay taxes. It pays like 0.5% taxes. And back in 2013, if you remember, you know, the IRS, they have a tendency to find these things out. So they started asking these questions. That's when this testimony took place. And these papers proved that in 2014, they did in fact go looking for any possible way that they could get another, they could, you know, reincorporate somewhere else to get this same kind of loophole because the Irish jig was up, as they might say.
Well, one of the more fascinating things that happened there is that the European Union looked at what they did in Ireland and said, oh, you owe the European Union taxes to the tune of about $13 billion plus or minus $1 billion for interest. And Ireland was like, no, no. So Ireland actually set up an escrow account that has Apple's $13 or $14 billion for the tax liability on that has not yet been given to the European Union because it is still in appeals because Ireland is saying, no, this is interfering with our sovereign rights to how we conduct taxes. And the European Union is saying, no, we are owed that money. And that is even beyond our own local situation with Apple and the IRS.
But one thing is for sure, Apple's not paying taxes. Or at least they're not paying the taxes that you would expect them to pay when they own half the world.
So robots doing your surgery, that's going to be better, right? Well, according to this article author, at least in some situations, it's more expensive and takes longer and therefore is not something we should ever do. I'm not sure I would agree with that conclusion.
Now, this is the Register. Yeah, we know about the Register. But they're summarizing a Journal of American Medicine paper. And so people looked at the history of robotic surgeries. I think most of them were orthoscopic. And they looked at like kidney removal and stuff like that. And they found that on average, robot surgeries take longer. They cost more, although it's like $1,000 more. And they are maybe as good or maybe just slightly less good than regular surgeons doing it.
So I don't see the problem. I mean, that seems like with where we are in technology, that's about where we are in technology. Because I would not want a non-robotic assisted, say, eye surgery, for example.
Yeah. And also think about, you know, you look at okay, not, was it 1985, 1984, where you had Super Mario Brothers?
Yeah.
And now you have photorealistic. You've got, what, Destiny 2 is supposed to be a really good-looking game, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's okay if we spend that extra $1,000 for Super Mario Brothers if in 30 years, 40 years, we have totally automated robot surgery suites in our bathroom.
I'm going to give you nightmares tonight. Cortana as your doctor.
But that means at some point we have to go through Clippy as your doctor, right?
And that's right. So this is probably the Clippy phase. It looks like you're trying to perform an appendectomy.
I can help you with that.
Oh, Ford has people wearing exoskeletons. This seems really cool. But at the same time, it's like, okay. I mean, so these are factory workers, and to help them from getting fatigue from, you know, working overhead and things like that, they're prototyping an exoskeleton to help people do manual labor inside their factories.
This, the auto workers union seemed to have a big impact on this. They're like, yes, we need exoskeletons. And I mean, have you ever done overhead work? It is incredibly tiresome to hold your hands over your head for whatever reason, you know? And so they're saying, yeah, go ahead. Now, it's true that robots already do most of the work, but maybe this is a decent sort of middle ground of keeping people employed in some way, even if it's temporary, rather than just letting the robots do everything.
It might be more temporary than those factory workers realize, because imagine those exoskeletons outfitted with tons of gyroscopic sensors and inertia sensors and things like that. Think about self-driving cars. I mean, for self-driving cars, where did the data come from? It came from millions upon millions of data points. So we're going to have self-driving exoskeletons pretty soon.
You know what the silver lining there is? Tons of aftermarket exoskeletons for sale for dirt cheap. You know, Ford plant goes fully robotic, pick up a cheap exoskeleton. It's going to be fantastic.
I wonder if I could get TensorFlow running on the external skeleton and have it help me with housework, because that would be amazing.
So you would still be physically in the suit, but you'd be watching movies or something while it just moves around. That would be hilarious.
Yeah. Like train it by mopping the floor a few times and then just let it go. Oh, so there was a self-driving, this made the news, this was in all the news everywhere, and we wanted to set the record straight. There was a self-driving shuttle bus collision with a semi, and this was entirely the semi driver's fault. Don't let anybody tell you different.
Yeah, the early headlines for this, I think they amended them, was like, first trip of self-driving car ends in crash, you know, and you think, oh, wow, that's, but no, this was definitely a semi driver who was bullying this little shuttle or wasn't paying attention or whatever. The shuttle did exactly what it was supposed to do, which was stop. And it was at a full stop when the semi ripped its fender off and backed into it.
Now, what the semi driver may have just discovered is that these things have a lot of cameras and sensors.
Yeah. And they will not be intimidated. Like, a lot of times the big trucks, you know, they'll crowd you out of your lane or whatever. And it's like, hey, what are you going to do about it? It's a giant mini ton machine, and you can't stop it with your little car. But the robots are not intimidated. They're like, hey, man, the rules say I'm allowed to be here. I'm going to be here.
Good luck with that, human occupants.
Yeah.
Switching gears a little bit. Farmers in India are using AI to increase crop yields. And okay, I mean, that sounds really good, but you actually dig into this and it's really high tech and low tech simultaneously. The AI is sending text messages and voicemails to farmers telling them when to plant, when to harvest, when to look out for pests, and it's leading to 30% higher yields with just the relatively minor change. I mean, these are not super technologically advanced farmers, but just a little bit of a push from technology is able to move the needle 30%.
But the really cool thing about it is there are no sensors or anything like that. They're not like putting things in the fields to detect these things. They're using just predictions from past weather data and stuff like that. And there's probably some other inputs, but it's not anything the farmer's doing or paying for. All you have to have is a phone that can get text messages. That's it. And of course, everybody has that. So I think this is the end of the first year that they've been doing it. And sure enough, some guy was like, I was going to plant my whatever, and they told me to wait 3 weeks, and I waited 3 weeks, and look at this harvest, you know?
This is the first time that I've read about an AI that has made me think of an episode of Star Trek, the original series, where it was like they had the AI that was taking care of the people, and they just referred to it as like the Guardian or whatever. This is it. This is like 200 years from now, this AI is still going to be operational, telling people when to plant stuff. And it's like, oh, the Guardian messages us on the It's going to be great.
It also shows you that, you know, we've looked at the self-driving tractors and that kind of thing. So when you have a whole fleet of self-driving farm equipment and you've got the AI to tell them when and where to do their jobs, what's the farmer doing at that point? What's the human? You know, we might be looking at autonomous farming on a grand scale in 20 years.
Refuel the machines, get it unstuck from the mud if it gets stuck in the mud.
Well, mechanics, but see, the autonomous machine can just request the mechanic. So you have one mechanic working like, you know, five counties. And he just goes from one to one, fixes it, and sends it back on its way.
We've also got a story for you about a tree planting robot. I'm not sure what we would call this. Tree planty? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Maybe seedy.
Seedy. Yeah, I like seedy. Seedy's good. So this is a tree planting robot called Seedy. And it's like, okay, how hard is this really? We've taken a look at other robots that basically just are drones and fly over an area, drop seeds, and call it a day. No, these guys say that if you want a higher germination rate, a higher success rate planting seeds, you've got to look around. It can't be too wet or too dry or too sunny or not sunny enough. And this robot does that.
Yeah. And of course, it's not, you know, the drones, they just drop things. This one's actually negotiating this terrain, which is the hardest part. Because you think about it, where do trees grow? They grow in mountainous or regions that are otherwise not accessible by road or anything like that. So they have to figure out, hey, there's a cliff. How do I get on top of the cliff? Because the next tree goes on top of the cliff. And that's the big challenge.
It doesn't fly.
No, it just rolls around.
It's too smart to fly. So, neat. I like that.
Someday we'll have a flying seed robot.
I expect this robotics team to report in a year, and it's like, we've planted 31 million trees. That would be nice.
Yeah, apparently they plant a lot of trees in Canada, and they've been using humans to do it until now. So,
neat.
There's another job that's going to disappear.
But it's still good for the environment, right? That's a good thing.
They're growing trees, killing jobs.
So this is sort of fun. We've talked about Hatsune Miku before, but now computers are writing perfectly acceptable pop songs as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, there are definitely genres of music where we're old. Now, let's face it, we're not hip. And we hear them and we're like, oh my God, what is this? Is just
what's hip frightens and scares me.
Yeah, these Pop-Tarts, all their songs. It's like, didn't I hear that beat, that exact thing? And like last week in the other song. And there really is a formula. They figured it out. It's like the Nickelback formula, where scientifically that is rewarding to the brain to hear those certain progressions and stuff like that. And this just takes it a step further and lets you flip a bunch of switches and it spits out a song.
We could use that for the intro and outro on the news. We saved this story for kind of toward the end because we knew if we told you at the beginning of the show, you would be gone and then our view metrics would be terrible. StarCraft II is free to play starting today. So you can download StarCraft II and play it and enjoy it. And it's amazing. And it came out like 75 years ago, but it's still a lot of fun.
This is the full multiplayer. So how many Smurf accounts do you think were created today?
At least a million. Yeah. Maybe 2 million. I mean,
so you get the first campaign. I think it's the human campaign, or Terran, I suppose I should call it, and all the multiplayer. So you're going to get a big pick. If you want to get started in StarCraft II multiplayer, now's the time to do it because all the other people who can't play will also be starting.
Speaking of environmental responsibility, one Bitcoin transaction now uses as much energy as your house in a week, according to Motherboard. But when we dug into the details, we're not really sure about that.
The math that they used made a lot of assumptions. And of course, electricity costs different amounts in different parts of the world. I think they're probably at least in a ballpark. And the point still stands that as Bitcoin becomes more and more valuable, it's insane how much electricity is being thrown at it. Because, you know, it makes more sense to mine it. And that's sort of how it was designed, but you wonder if even the Bitcoin creator ever thought, what if we get into the $500,000 per Bitcoin realm? What does that look like in terms of electricity?
I'm going to be really disappointed if we perfect interstellar travel in my lifetime and we travel to a foreign star and we discover something amazing, like an engineering achievement, like a Dyson sphere. And we discovered that the reason the Dyson sphere was constructed was to capture all of the energy from the star to mine something like Bitcoin.
Cryptocurrency. And also, like 6 months after the Dyson sphere was completed and it began mining the crypto, somebody found an exploit, and we immediately moved to a different crypto, which doesn't require that much electricity.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oops, I guess we don't need this Dyson sphere anymore. Well, we'll just, you know, let it go. It's fine. Yeah. Well, the U.S. government has approved genetically modified mosquitoes to get rid of a different, more invasive and dangerous mosquito. So that's kind of, this is kind of a first. They're going to release it in 20 states. Seems like they should do a pilot state first. Like maybe they should pilot in like Rhode Island or something.
Well, you know where it was invented? Lexington, Kentucky. So we are right next to it. Hey, it's going to be in our state. And what they're going to do is there's this disease that mosquitoes can get, which causes them to be infertile. Hey, right? You don't want to kill the mosquitoes. Just make sure they can't breed. So what they do is they take millions of male mosquitoes and they infect them with this thing, and then they just release them, and when they encounter the females and have sexy time, females become infertile because they're infected with this thing. Now the people who detract from this, they say, okay, how do you guarantee that all 20 million of those mosquitoes are male? And if there's a couple of females mixed in there, what happens when they bite somebody and this disease goes into their bloodstream? I don't know if there's any possibility that that happens, but that's the other side. That's the argument that people are making.
If anything happens with this, I'm sure you're going to hear about it in the follow-ups. It's going to be bad.
I'm sure it will be a mosquito-based superhero.
I was, the other thing that involves mosquitoes that was really ballsy is Bill Gates was giving a talk about how, because Bill Gates has genetically modified mosquitoes and stuff before. And he was giving a TED talk, and he had a jar of mosquitoes, and he released the mosquitoes into the room. And he's like, why should poor people be the one to experience the threat of malaria from mosquitoes? And all the wealthy people were like, he wouldn't really do that, would he? I mean, he's not really like actually a supervillain, but they were grown in the lab, so they were disease-free mosquitoes. But I still thought that was really ballsy, because you could imagine a wealthy snowflake. I mean, the front row seats in a TED talk are really expensive.
Well, I would argue with Bill Gates that the reason is because uncontrolled birth rate. Hey, slow it down a little bit, and maybe malaria won't be quite as much of a problem.
Well, if you do decide to do that StarCraft thing, good news that AI is not better than human players at StarCraft for right now. So when you get your ass kicked, it's probably going to be those Korean players and not a bot.
On the heels of the Go defeat, the greatest Go player was defeated by AI, the AlphaGo. And we reported on that, and they were like, you know what? I bet we could beat them at StarCraft. Not even close. This one South Korean kid just stomped every AI that they threw at him. I don't think the AI ever took a game. So I guess StarCraft is a more complex game than Go, we've discovered.
Soon, TM. Maybe once Intel, once Roger Kuduri and Intel finish the new like machine learning GPUs, maybe it'll be possible.
Now, they did say that Blizzard is going to work with them and give them all the archives for machine learning. So,
of all of the StarCraft games ever played?
Oh, I don't know about ever played, but you know, wow. a huge archive of StarCraft games. So maybe next year they'll have a shot.
Well, hot on the heels of the success of Game of Thrones, you know, everybody wants in on Game of Thrones type action. What better universe than the Lord of the Rings universe? And Amazon wants to produce that. So yeah, they're thinking about doing a Game of Thrones style TV show in the Lord of the Rings universe.
Yeah, with Amazon paying for it. We really included this because we weren't sure if Krista was going to join us for the news this week, and I just wanted to trigger her with this, which is, oh, there's the boiler snake.
We triggered the boiler snake.
He's also a big Middle Earth fan.
She is getting ready to decorate the set for Christmas, so we've got that to look forward to.
But we did add the next story to trigger someone who loves a certain intellectual property.
Oh, Lord. Star Trek Discovery is on hiatus. It's going to return January 7th, 2018. And I think the boiler is getting really riled up because it has the same opinion about Star Trek Discovery that I do.
Now, I wonder, is it because of the popularity they're bringing it back so quick, or do they always plan this? Because why would they announce it now?
No, let me fix this story for you right here. Let's see if I can... If I can do this really quickly, this will probably have to be edited slightly. All right.
Oh, hang on.
There we go. There, I fixed it. Discovery will return on January 7th,
2018. The Discovery Channel? Is that what that means?
No, there's this TV show that's called Discovery. It has nothing to do with Star Trek. It is in no way related to Star Trek at all.
I see the Star Trek insignia that those people are wearing.
It's literally just, it's vaguely similar to the Star Trek logo, but for copyright purposes is distinct. So, yeah, it's not really... So you get that to look forward to.
I don't know. I think the public is, they're not agreeing with you because they seem to think that it's worthwhile and everybody's watching.
Is everybody watching it? Because I don't know. It's just not, it's not good. It's not good.
I haven't seen it, so I can't judge it either way.
It's too, it takes itself way too seriously and it does not feel like Star Trek. Like I don't, it from a psychological standpoint, it doesn't taste like Star Trek. It tastes like generic sci-fi
show. Is this like the stevia of Star Trek?
I think it needs like maybe perhaps a slightly more poisonous stevia.
So NutraSweet then?
Even more poisonous. NutraSweet with a mercury contamination?
What's it to the one that starts with an S? I can't remember.
What's the one that they stopped selling in the 70s? There was one, they came out with a sweetener in the 70s and they were like, this is great. And then some people had real bad kidney failure and they were like, ooh, let's not do that. It's that one. That
so
one's the one.
You heard it here first. Star Trek Discovery causes kidney failure. Tell your friends.
Well, there's the new tagline.
You think we'll get sued for that?
Yeah, probably. Oh, good night, everybody. Thanks to our patrons. Got a lot of interesting comments coming up this week. We've got a contest. Don't forget to join the contest, a free PC giveaway. That's gonna be the end of the month. It's a four-way giveaway. So there's going to be a separate video on that. Look for that. Share that. It should be good.
Also got our holiday picks for your shopping season coming up. Look for that in the next couple of weeks.
Be sure to use the affiliate links or not. We don't care. I mean, every little bit helps.
Definitely do.
It's fine. We'll see you guys next time.